You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Over the last year, the Black Lives Matter movement and other protest efforts around the country have made the case that African Americans routinely experience injustice in the U.S. today.
As with all movements, naming the problem is just one step in a long line of actions. Marches, lobbying, protests, speeches. There are a wide range of ideas on the best ways to enact change and debates over just how to do that.
During the civil rights movement of the 1960s, one tactic that was embraced became known as the politics of respectability, that by showing a whole host of positive characteristics, African Americans could further their cause. Think of the well-dressed, calm, and studious black students at the historic lunch counter protests.
The politics of respectability has been criticized over the years. For many, it's come to be seen as in some ways an acceptance or even justification of racism. Our next guest disagrees. Randall Kennedy is an author and law professor at Harvard. His article in this month's issue of Harper's Magazine is called Lifting as We Climb, a Progressive Defense of Respectability Politics. Randall, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
You start your piece talking about a message along the lines of respectability that your parents gave you. What was that message?
Well, that message was basically that I was going to be entering a skeptical, even hostile, racist society, and that I needed to conduct myself accordingly. I needed to be careful in the way in which I comported myself. I needed to win people over. I needed to convince skeptics. I certainly did not need to needlessly alienate people, make myself obnoxious. So my parents told me and my brother and my sister that we were basically ambassadors of blackness, and that especially in the presence of white people, we needed to comport ourselves in a dignified way that nullified the rampant racist stereotypes that are abroad in our society.
Now, whether we're talking about something like that at an individual level or with activists or protest movements, that's a lot of pressure to put on a person. Does it feel like an unfair burden to have to carry that idea that white people are looking at you as an ambassador of blackness?
Well, yeah, it probably is. It probably is. It is a burden. And is it unfair? Sure, it's unfair. We live in an unfair society, and you know, why should black people have any special burdens placed upon them? They shouldn't. And my parents made it clear to me that they were not ratifying what we were facing. They were not condoning what we were facing, but they were saying, listen, if you want to get ahead, if you want to accomplish what you want to accomplish, this is what you need to do. And that message is a message that has been articulated by all sorts of people. It was articulated, of course, by the great Martin Luther King Jr. It was articulated by the great Mr. Civil Rights Thurgood Marshall. It's been articulated by lots of different people.
One argument in response to your piece since it came out and over the last century, probably more, is that this doesn't work. Some, including the Black Panthers and others, responded to Martin Luther King's message by saying, no, we need to raise a ruckus. We need to get attention. We need to not accept what the white culture wants us to do. So which do you think has been more effective as a message?
Listen, I agree with that. We do need to raise a ruckus. And the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, especially in its early years, its best years, they raised a ruckus. In your introduction, you talked about the people engaged in the sit-in movement. They were certainly raising a ruckus. King and company, John Lewis, raising a ruckus. Great Julian Bond, who recently passed away, raising a ruckus. The question is, how does one do it? Do you raise a ruckus in a way that brings people to your side, that makes people admire you, that makes even your enemies grudgingly admire you? That's what the great civil rights protesters of the 1960s were doing. And that's what I think, ought to be remembered now, and we ought to take lessons from them.
Yeah, you talk about this as a PR message in a way where you have these dignified, often young black protesters, and next to them were angry, wild, white counter-protesters, tormentors, and you mentioned enemies, even some people who were opponents of the civil rights movement, acknowledging, hey, this one side looks morally superior here.
Absolutely. I think that one of the great things about the civil rights movement in its best days was it captured the moral high ground, and it kept it, and it used that moral high ground to advance a its mission. Its mission being, of course, advancing the interests of Black Americans, advancing the interests of racial justice.
We're talking about the civil rights movement over the years, the idea of respectability politics with Randall Kennedy from Harvard Law School. He had a recent piece, a cover story in Harper's Magazine on this topic. So some of the people responding to your piece expressing frustration. One of the things that's being protested by the Black Lives Matter group is being targeted by police around the country. They're saying, even presenting ourselves as respectable, I should say, as young Black people, it doesn't protect us. We're still getting that attention, whether we're respectable or not. How do you respond to that?
Number one, the Black Lives Matter movement is entirely correct when it says that we are in the grip of an intolerable, actually disgraceful, actually shameful system in which the putative protectors of law and order are all too often being bullies, are all too often humiliating people without any good reason. And I'm speaking now about, of course, police misconduct. There are a lot of good policemen, but all too often the police are acting in a bad way. And not only are they acting in a bad way, but the legal system is condoning it. And that is terrible. And so all the people who are protesting against that are doing, as far as I'm concerned, their protest is a well-aimed protest. Now, you know, when people say, well, there's nothing that we can do that will protect us. Well, you know, there's no magic bullet. Of course, even if one conducts oneself in the best possible way, that's not going to protect one from any and everything. But the question is, you know, as a general matter, is it good to conduct yourself in a way that wins you the moral high ground? Is it right to conduct yourself in a way in which a neutral observer says, look at these people. You know, I like the way they're acting. I respect the way they're acting. I admire the way they're conducting themselves, even in the face of oppression. It seems to me that's just a sensible way to go.
Another response has been that, hey, the problem with racism is from white people, from institutional racism, sometimes as represented in, as you mentioned, instances of police violence. This idea of respectability politics puts the blame, the onus on the Black people who are suffering as a result of those things.
Well, I just think that that's just incorrect, that, you know, if you are protesting police misconduct, and it should be protested, again, I want to emphasize that, it should be protested. I admire the people who are protesting against it. It should be protested. The question is, how does one do it? Is our cause furthered by acting in a way that, you know, people look and they see that people are, you know, shouting expletives, they are conducting themselves in a wild way, they are looting, they are engaging in violence. That's not advancing the cause. That's not advancing the cause. In fact, that's just being irresponsible. The people who have advanced the cause the most have been people who handled themselves in a responsible manner, people who were disciplined. And again, you know, I said before, raise a ruckus. The question is, how does one do that best? And you do that best by thinking about how am I coming across? How are people viewing me? That's not all one thing's about, but that's certainly one of the things that people should be thinking about, that protesters should be thinking about.
We're talking to Randall Kennedy, author and professor at Harvard Law School. His article in this month's issue of Harper's is called Lifting as We Climb, A Progressive Defense of Respectability Politics.
And we'd like to hear your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Should civil rights activists and protesters be civil? What's your take on the debate over respectability politics for African Americans? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation with Randall Kennedy, author and law professor at Harvard Law School. His article in this month's issue of Harper's is called Lifting as We Climb, a Progressive Defense of Respectability Politics.
You can join in. We'd like to hear your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Should civil rights activists and protesters present themselves as respectful, non-threatening? What do you think of the Black Lives Matter protests in Wisconsin and elsewhere? What's your take on this debate over respectability politics for African Americans? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Randall, before we go to our callers, outside of protests, outside of political action, this respectability idea is out there. Just you see laws every now and then in small towns against baggy pants, saggy pants for young African-American men, or usually targeting them. Is this something people, that black people, should be thinking about in their daily lives, presenting this respectable image?
The fact of the matter is that everybody should, and most people do. So, for instance, some of the people who say that they're against respectability politics, you'll see them on television. They're saying they're against respectability politics. What are they, what are they wearing on television? They're wearing a business suit. They are speaking they're speaking very nicely so that people can understand exactly what they're saying. They are, in fact, engaged in respectability politics at the same time that they're putting down respectability politics. When if you go to a job interview, do you go to a job interview dressed like you would be going to the gym? No. You put on a business suit. You follow certain conventions in order to get ahead. Frankly, what I'm saying sounds should be, in a way, I think, rather uncontroversial.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Billy is on the line in Green Bay. Billy, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Say, I just had a question for the guest. As a 27-year-old, I think one of the biggest issues with this generation, black or white, is the fact that there seems to be a lack of incentives for being civilized. With the civil rights movement of the 60s, we had such towering figures like Martin Luther King Jr., who really did such a good job of encompassing the benefits and the positivity and the humanity of being civilized. And my question is, how difficult is it, how possible is it to engage a generation where apathy and these disincentives to be civilized, and when we have things that catch the news that usually are so, it's the riots and things like that. Is it difficult to try to unite people under this civilized movement?
Billy, thanks for the call. So Randall, an apathetic, sometimes uncivil generation, black or white, he says.
Sure. Well, I think that motivating people protest collectively in a sensible way is always very difficult. And again, I don't want to be misunderstood. I think that the Black Lives Matter, much of it has been productive. I think that there are people all over the United States, who are doing quite wonderful things, trying to shine a bright light on those aspects of our society that need reforming. So I'm not condemning these people. What I am saying, however, is for people who are engaged in protests, especially people who are engaged in protests, simply be mindful of how you come across. Now, there are going to be some people who are going to condemn protesters no matter what they do, just like there were people who condemned the people who engaged in sit-ins in the early 1960s and said that they were not being respectable. After all, they were being arrested. There's always going to be debate about these things. Sometimes we're going to disagree on tactics. All I'm saying is be mindful, be attentive to, the public relations aspect of things. One does not want to needlessly alienate people. One wants to bring people over to one side.
Billy, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Tree in Madison. Tree, hi.
Hi.
Oh, what do you think?
Well, I think that it's about time that someone stood up and said that black lives do matter. I'm tired of the races that just keep putting them down and saying, you know, they're no good or they don't care. People do care. And I was a foster mom for about 17 and a half years in Madison, and I took care of a lot of mixed kids, white kids, Mexican kids. Doesn't matter. They all matter. All these kids that are being treated so horribly. And another thing about the pants being down, so what? You know what? I wore tie-dye T-shirts. I wore bell-bottoms as a kid. I still wear tie-dye T-shirts, you know. And our parents were like, hey, that, you shouldn't be wearing that. That's bad. That's this.
All right, Tree, I want to jump in and get Randall on this, because this reminds me, you know, the idea of just a fad here. And you point out in your piece that sometimes maybe respectability goes too far and might lead to African-American leadership saying, hey, let's stay away from jazz or hip hop, which later people look and say, hey, these are great American achievements.
That's right. There are people who've, I mean, this tradition, the tradition of respectability politics is, you know, had its own internal debates, and sometimes people go too far. There have been people who have articulated a need for respectability politics, who put down jazz, who put down hip hop, who put down various things, which, you know, in retrospect, were not only innocuous, but, you know, in many instances, great cultural innovation. So, you know, one needs to be careful about these things. And I just, again, I want to be clear. I've said already, I admire the people who are engaged in protest. We need protest, but we need to be mindful. Now, your last caller, you know, she at one point she says, well, what does it matter how somebody, you know, wears their pants? Well, it matters. If I'm hiring people, I tell you what, if I were hiring people and some kid came in and had, you know, his pants, way down so that I was, you know, looking at his underwear, would I be inclined to hire him? No, I would not be inclined to hire him. And my disinclination to hire him would be hurtful to him and his family. He wants employment. He should conduct himself, dress in a way that would make that, you know, more likely than not.
We're talking about race, politics, and respectability with Randall Kennedy from Harvard Law School. Back to our callers now with Robert in Waukesha. Robert, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Professor, I just had a quick question. I understand the need for respectability in discussion and debate, but when someone's protesting, often it's very easy to ignore someone who's being polite. They'll put them in a protest area and basically ignore them. It doesn't even make the news. Mm-hmm. Or someone who's being disruptive tends to get a little bit more attention in this type of news cycle. So how do you feel would be the best way to balance getting attention for your for necessary change with being respectable and polite?
Yeah, I think that you have a point. Protest is a difficult endeavor. And I've said before, definitely raise a ruckus. The question is, how does one do it in a way that doesn't needlessly alienate people? Again, the people who I have held up as my heroes, they were people who were arrested. John Lewis has been arrested many, many times. Julian Bond was arrested many, many times. Martin Luther King was arrested many, many times. These were not people who were, you know, shrinking violets and were unwilling to challenge the system. They were willing to challenge the system, but they did it in a way that was admirable. They were not acting in a way in which, you know, even allies sort of cover their faces and are, you know, sort of afraid to be affiliated with them. The great thing about the people that I just mentioned, their allies could rest assured and be affiliated with them before the world. You didn't have to be ashamed. You didn't have to be fretful. You could stand up and be with those people. And I'm simply saying that protesters should conduct themselves in such a way that they don't have to, you know, nobody has to be given, you know, making excuses for them or ashamed of them.
Very briefly, as we wrap up, are you worried that this debate over respectability is distracting from a mission that both sides of that debate agree on?
No, I don't think it's a distraction, because I think it's very important for people to be attentive to the way in which they are engaging in protest. And I have friends that, you know, agree or disagree with me about this or that, and we are united in our belief that we live in a deeply flawed society that needs protest. The question is, how do we carry on that protest? And, you know, we need to discuss that.
Thank you.
And
so
argue about it and debate it and, you know, try to make ourselves better as we try to make our country better.
Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Randall Kennedy, author and law professor at Harvard Law School. His article in this month's issue of Harper's is called Lifting as We Climb, a progressive defense of respectability politics.